Hello, we're live. How is everyone?
Amazing.
Good. Apart from freezing, I have my hot water bottle with me.
Oh. Emma's like, can't relate. So
no.
Yeah, can't relate, really.
Really, it was a little bit cold this morning, wasn't it?
I had goosebumps.
Oh, was it?
Like only 30 degrees or something?
Yeah, we dropped below 30 degrees and like we almost considered wearing t-shirts.
It sounds really difficult for you.
Guys, it's been really hard. It has been really hard. So I appreciate all the sympathy that everyone's been giving me. One thing that we are just getting over right now is I just Googled, what's that word?
Tryptophoria,
tryptophonia. Does anyone else get this, right? If there's lots of like little things together, it like freaks them out.
Is that like, you know, those frogs that carry their eggs in their back?
Yeah.
Is it, and the little tadpoles come out the holes?
Yeah, that's exactly what it's like. I was cutting, what's that fruit? Papaya. I was cutting papaya last night and I was like, oh, like that, all those little things, like all together, it was freaking me out. And then we just Googled it. Do not Google that. Like it is.
That, the foot.
It comes up as like someone's foot or like their hand, yeah. And there's like all these little, looks like groupers or some crap.
Yeah, it literally looks like something out of a horror film.
It's horrible. It's horrible, but I really want to squeeze it as well. Can't stop thinking about it. Right, let's get on with the question.
You're giving yourself the fear.
Okay, question number one from Bish Bosh. I'm getting back on track with workouts after COVID, but due to time restraints, I may be starting at 3 to 4 per week again. Would I be better splitting them into lower body, upper body, etc., or all full body? I don't want to miss something if I can only fit 3 workouts in. I'm on fat loss.
That's great. And honestly, 3 workouts is all you need. You could do 3 full body. I would probably stick to the program and do push pull legs because it is almost full body anyway. Like all of the push and pull workouts have lower body exercises in. So you're probably going to get more optimal recovery if you do it that way, because essentially they're full body. They're just kind of focused on pushing movements or pulling movements. And then you've got like the lower body focus as well.
Yeah, I think you just need to make sure that you're properly recovered as well.
You did a great post this week on COVID recovery, didn't you?
Yeah, I think people are, obviously everybody will recover slightly differently. People will recover at different rates. People will be quicker to recover. When I had it, I was back training within 2 days. I felt absolutely fine. Whereas I know a lot of people, so some people have obviously got long COVID and they're still 6-7 months later still struggling. So you just need to, similarly to injury, it's going to be pretty frustrating at this point when you're trying to work out where you are with your recovery. Sometimes it's going to be trying and testing. Don't push too hard initially. Don't go balls to the wall and kill yourself, because it's not the best idea. Because the last thing you want to do is force the recovery. We don't want to destroy the recovery and end up pushing yourself back into being ill again. So just be careful when you're coming back to it.
Yeah, and I think something like from a mindset perspective is like trying to catch up on the time that you've lost, and that can really like hamper you when you're trying to ease yourself back in. And that's where, and this is where actually working with Andy as I was coming back from back surgery was really, really useful, is having that outside perspective almost to validate the fact that you're not exercising. It's like, oh, I really want to get back to the gym. It's like, yeah, but what's best for you now isn't that. And it's like, oh yeah, but I feel a bit lazy not doing this, this and this. And it's like, yeah, but right now that isn't what's best for you. And having someone like a coach who wants the best for you and can kind of reassure you that actually rest at the moment is still a better option. Or what we've done quite a lot with people on COVID 6 who have had COVID and like slowly introducing exercise again, is just introducing the morning routine again. So you're doing a little bit and then you're just going to monitor and see how that goes. And then maybe after a week, you can add in 1 gym session, leave it a couple of days and see how you feel. But certainly don't go back in trying to lift what you were lifting before. And it's much better to take longer time than to rush the process and end up with something like long COVID or chronic fatigue.
Okay, next question from Karen. Do you really need to work abs if you lift 5 days a week? I've read that there shouldn't be a need to, as you recruit your abs to assist lifting heavy weights. But what if you don't recruit your abs properly?
Shona, you're the best on this.
Well, I personally, I mean, like, how do you know that you're not recruiting your abs properly? If you are lifting heavy weights and you're using a lifting belt, then chances are you're not using your abs. So I think it's a great idea for everyone to do some ab stuff every week. You don't have to do it every day, maybe just once a week. But it depends on what your goals are as well. Like if you want to build a six pack, then yes, I do think that you should be adding that in. Do you want to be stronger in your heavy lifts? Yes, I also think that you should do ab stuff as well. But I mean, you are right. Like when you're doing things like back squats, front squats, deadlifts, you are using your abs if you're not using a lifting belt.
Also, if you're not using your abs, you'll probably find that you collapse like a deck of cards if you're not doing
it very well. If you don't use your abs when you're walking, you'll fall over.
Yeah. I think one of the best kind of cues that I got taught was for most things is, remember when you were a kid and you used to get tickled, you get poked in the ribs, somebody would try and tickle you, that's the kind of tension that you want to
try and I just immediately wet myself.
Yeah, exactly. Or you end up farting, one of the two. But that kind of tension.
My brother used to like tickle me. Like I am so ticklish, and he used to tickle me like. Or and sometimes I would just wet myself, and then be like, "Well, it's not funny now, is it?"
Well, see, interestingly enough. So yeah, I do see where you're coming from, Andy. But interestingly enough, that Emma said that she used to wet herself, because if someone tickles you, right, chances are you go like that. It depends where that pressure is going. If the pressure is going downwards, you're going to wet yourself.
Yeah.
So that's when you are lifting heavy. I mean, we've moved away from core and abs now. We're talking about my favorite subject, pelvic floor. If you're lifting heavy and you're doing that, chances are you're going to wet yourself. So thinking about where that pressure is going, like you can send the pressure outwards, front, sideways. You don't necessarily have to send the pressure downwards, but yeah. I do agree with you, Andy, like that is a good cue to get your core, just as long as you're not pushing downwards at the same time.
Remember, Andy, you'll probably remember this, and Amelia probably will as well, but people used to say if you were trying to like tense your abs, whether it be like a photo shoot or like on a bodybuilding stage or something, to cough.
Yep.
So like they'd be like, yeah, cough again, and then like that would hold your package together, and that would, you know, I don't know, get into the right.
You rarely cough from your pelvic floor, you cough higher up, so your abdominals will ping up a bit higher.
But when like men are getting their balls checked, do they not say cough?
Yeah, nice to see if they ping around, like I said, you know, like the things that you're on a desk. It's like that.
That's not okay. I think so. Let's give, in fact, Catherine, you answered this in the group, I think, a couple of good core exercises. So I think I mentioned like anti-rotation, because a lot of people when they think abs, they're just like, oh right, so you think I should do crunches once a week.
Yeah, like, that's, I love deadlifts.
Not exactly what we mean.
Yeah, there's so honestly the number of abdominal exercises that are good there's so many. Pal lift press, wood chops, leg lifts, hanging leg curls, hanging leg lifts. Honestly, the list is endless. But as you say, exactly as mentioned, it's about being able to. I think a lot of people still do. I certainly see a lot of it in the gym as people doing abdominal work and actually not engaging their abs. They're just like pretty much flinging their weight around. So rope crunches is a good one. Like I really like rope crunches, but you see a lot of people doing it with like really heavy weight. And like if the weight's moving independently of you moving it, you're not using your abdominals. You're just using force to try and get it shifting.
I never find that works.
Yeah, you're a hanging leg raise fan, aren't you?
Yeah, I like hanging leg raises. I like anti-rotation stuff like pal lift press. I like, I don't know what they're called. Pikes. I like pike, like on the Swiss ball or on the TRX or something. But I never feel cable like crunches. And you're right, like the reason I don't program them is because I think most people do them wrong. And if you're not there to be like, this is exactly how you need to do it, then the other thing with any core exercise is do it slowly and then do it more slowly than you think you need to do it. Like the slower you do it, the harder it's going to be. Like hanging leg raises, like when you look at, not to diss CrossFit, but mostly CrossFit, when they're like toes to bar and they're just swinging up and down. Like I get that, like in that instance, it's not meant to be a core exercise. Like it's for reps or rounds or whatever, but that isn't how you should be doing them. Like if you're looking to build your core, it should be slow and controlled. And that's way more impressive than just like Andy was saying with the, if the weight is moving independently, it's because you're using momentum. And when you do toes to bar in the CrossFit style, like that's momentum essentially.
Awesome. Next question from Kirsty. Top tips for getting back on track when things get derailed for a week through illness or really important work deadlines or children's illness, maybe all at the same time.
Why don't you start with that one?
Yeah. That sucks that you've had a bit of a tough time recently. Hopefully things are like looking a bit more back to normal again. I think when it comes to like getting back on track, don't try and do everything all at once or try and make it all perfect from day one. Gradually phase yourself back in over the period of a week. I don't know, so maybe start off with day number one, focusing on your nutrition a little bit more, like trying to get your calories in, your protein, your fruits and vegetables, and then maybe the next day add in half your steps and then gradually build your steps up, and then think later on in the week about getting your first workout in. So don't put like loads of pressure on yourself to do everything all at the start perfectly, because you know, if you fail on day number one, you're going to be annoyed with yourself, or you might feel annoyed with yourself. So yeah, phase yourself back in over a week and see how that feels.
Mm-hmm. I would say plan ahead as well. Like it's sometimes overwhelming when you think in your head, right, I want to do X, Y, and Z, I want to get my workouts in, I want to get this in, and like I feel overwhelmed like most mornings, not in a bad way, but just like this is everything I need to get done. And as soon as I write a list of it, this is when I'm going to do this, this, and this. This is what's important. These are the priorities to get done today. That stuff can wait till tomorrow. That stuff can wait till next week. Then I'm like, okay, this is manageable. I have a plan now. I can action this going forward. Same with your week. Like if you're looking at your week and you're like, when am I going to fit my workouts in? My kids need this. I've got to do this. I don't know. It sounds like there's a lot going on in your life, which is great because it means you've got a rich, full life. That's exactly what we want. But how are you going to fit these things in around that? And planning forward kind of reduces that overwhelm. She's like, okay, this is doable. I was just kind of had in my head that I needed to do everything today. And I think that like, I get that all the time. So I'm like, something needs to be done, I'm going to do it now. And actually, you know, just being like, what's the priority here that actually needs to get done? And a lot of the time we procrastinate on what really needs to get done by doing like little things that don't really need to get done and kind of stressing over those things. So identifying the most important things is really, really useful in terms of overwhelm.
Sweet. Next one from Tracy. This week I've had a drink of water in the middle of the night. How long do you need to wait before weighing yourself? I've not weighed myself, as I heard you and Andy say it's pointless once you start having a drink.
Oh, no. That's absolutely fine.
Overthinking just a little bit.
Yeah. We just, there's no point weighing yourself like at the end of the day when you've had food and drink and, you know, a full day. Like you're obviously going to weigh more. The point is being consistent. If you get up every night and have a glass of water, that's fine. Like it, and also it's not going to make a big difference. Like if you think how much, like
I don't know. It's just not one of those ones though. It's a five liter bottle of water we're having at midnight.
Yeah, I mean if it is, then you're probably going to weigh a kilogram more. So you can pee it out. But yeah, that's way overthinking. Don't worry about it. Just when it comes to weighing, just try and be consistent. That's why we say first thing in the morning, same scale, same place. Get that consistency in there. But yeah, life happens. There'll be fluctuations. There's always fluctuations on the scales. And we had a post this morning in the group about someone who was like, I guess a bit disheartened about the fact that some days the scale weight is down and some days it's up. And obviously that's so normal to feel, but really we could not give and absolute monkeys about day-to-day scale weight fluctuations, because it tells us absolutely nothing about anything, like zero. What we're looking at is trends over time. That's why we like you to take your weight every day, not to compare it to yesterday, but to compare it to last month. And so we can see averages over time. Now, what you'll notice is it does fluctuate day to day. So the reason that we need to take it every day, or that it's useful to take it every day, is so that you're not catching those fluctuations and thinking, I've not made any progress. Like if you only weighed yourself once a week, but you caught yourself on a higher day, it doesn't really tell us the full story that actually most of that week you weighed less than you did last week, which means that you probably are on the right tracks for fat loss. So that's the reason we get you to weigh every day, but we really don't care about the fluctuations between day to day, and neither should you, because it tells us zero. Like you do not put on fat overnight, you do not lose fat overnight. Try not to stress about those things.
Yeah, I think it is something that most people who have tried diet over and over again over a long period of time will probably stress about, is seeing those scale fluctuations. But that's what we're trying to educate you on, is that the reason why you don't freak out at these things, and the fact that fluctuations happen daily and you can see that. We're trying to, again, I saw the post earlier on, exactly as Emma said, you know, trying to educate you in the fact that there are reasons behind it, but it's not body fat. Like you're not, if you're up 3 pounds overnight, there's no danger that could be body fat. So it's something that's just, don't, you're stressing yourself for no reason, and that's the start of things starting to tumble. So take it out your head, just relax a little bit.
Yeah, I would probably say that if you're that preoccupied with the scales, then stop weighing yourself. Maybe use a pair of jeans. If there's a pair of jeans that you put on and you're like, okay, I feel they're a little bit looser, that's great, I'm making progress. You're not going to put those jeans on every day like you would weigh yourself every day. Maybe do that, because as Andy said, it's just going to get worse. Like, there's no point weighing yourself every day. And also, when we read your check-ins, it's not really something that we care about either. We want to hear about all the other wins and successes, non-scale victories that you've had that week. It's literally just one way to measure progress, and that's all it is. It's not the most important by far.
Oh, no. Probably the least important. And actually, I had a question about... a question about this yesterday, where someone was like, I feel so much better and my clothes are fitting so much better, but I just think I should have lost more weight by now. And it's like, well, what was the aim of losing weight? The aim of losing weight was basically what you've just said. You wanted your clothes to feel better and you wanted to feel better about yourself. So what, like, why do you care that this random marker isn't there? Like, that wasn't, like, you've already achieved what you wanted to achieve by the weight loss. So don't worry about it. And as Shona's saying, like, you don't need to weigh yourself. Like, if it's really affecting you, just don't weigh yourself. The reason that we normally get people to weigh themselves every day is because for a lot of people, it's a clicking moment when they're like, oh my God, it fluctuates so much every day. It can't possibly be a change in body fat. And that actually improves their relationship with the scales. Everyone is completely different, so that doesn't always work. And as Shona's saying, when that doesn't work, and when, you know, you've had that explained to you, you kind of, you understand, but it's still impacting you, just stop weighing yourself. Like, I don't weigh myself, not because it impacts me, but because it's completely irrelevant. Like, I don't care what I weigh, so why would I keep doing that? So you can find like a different marker that maybe is more applicable to what's important to you at the moment. And like, what I care about is maintenance. And I know that if I can do the same amount of pull-ups that I used to be able to do, there's no way I will have like change my body composition significantly. And so that's like, that's the marker I use to keep me kind of on track, because that's more appropriate to my goal. But yeah, like a pair of jeans might work, or progress photos are useful, keeping a good track of the way you feel, your energy levels, your performance in the gym, all those things are really, really important. Measurements, things like that.
Sweet. Laura, can you recommend advice specifically to reduce the size of my upper thighs / legs? Everything else in is generally in proportion apart from them, and they always are right at the end of any transformation results. Do I need to stop doing certain exercises that may be keeping them this way?
I feel like I really identify with this. That is exactly like what I went through. I used to hate like my upper thighs because they always touched. Like, I grew up when thigh gaps and like skinny legs were what everyone wanted, and I just could never get that. And I've tried like a program where I did loads of like abductor exercises. No, adductor exercises doesn't make a difference. Do you know what? Just accepting that is the way my body is made. As Lady Gaga says, you were born that way.
Genetics, baby, genetics.
Embrace them thighs. They touch, that's fine. You can hold your snacks. The snacks will not fall down in between your legs.
You'll not lose your phone down the toilet.
You will not, nope.
So many bonuses, so many.
Yeah.
But I think, like, on that point, like, that's kind of being what you would class, like, the typical woman of pear shapes. Like, most women are relatively pear shaped. And there are loads of benefits to that, not just the snacks, but also, like, the fact that you're going to have a lower risk of cardiovascular disease at the same relative body fat percentage, that's quite a good one. Like, storing fat on your legs or more peripherally is actually much better for your health. But as Shona's saying, you can't choose where fat comes from. So, you know, if you want to lose fat in that area, it will eventually come if you're in a deficit, but at what cost? And you might need to get really lean to get there. And we see the same kind of thing with getting abs. Like, some people need to get unhealthily lean to have abs, which means that it's probably not a good goal for them. And some people may need to get unhealthily lean to have a thigh gap, for example, or like, maybe that's an extreme, but like slimmer thighs. So you kind of need to work out that, what we always term like the cost benefit of that, like, what's that really going to cost you, and is it worth it? And I would much agree with Shona, like, it's body acceptance. Like, this is the way my body's built, and I appreciate it, and I appreciate my thighs for all that they do. And yes, they're slightly bigger than maybe I'd like them to be, but I love all these other parts about my body, and that's something I'm willing to accept.
Yeah, I would like ask yourself as well, like, why is it that you want to make yourself or your thighs specifically smaller as well? Like, that, how yours is, like, dig down, like, ask yourself why three times. Mm-hmm. And also, is it because you think that that's going to make you happier? Because I can guarantee, like, it won't make you happier making yourself smaller. So yeah.
That's a really
patriarchy good. Wants you to have a thigh gap. That's what it is.
It is. Yeah.
Fuck the patriarchy.
Love it. Okay, next question from Karen. Is there any difference doing 3 sets of an exercise to doing 4 sets of an exercise?
Potentially more volume.
Yeah, it's one more set.
It's one more set. Extra work, baby!
And then, like, one workout, it's not going to make a difference, but over a prolonged period of time, it will. Mm. It's like, I don't know, like, been like, if I brush my teeth for 1 minute today instead of 2 minutes, like, will it make a difference? It might over.
You know, that's a really good example, I think. And it's kind of like, it leads into like law of diminishing returns. So the first set of an exercise that you do, you're probably going to get the vast majority of the benefit from it. Much like the first 30 seconds that you brush your teeth, you're probably going to get the vast majority of the benefit. If you brush your teeth for a minute, you're probably going to get even more benefit. If you do it for 2 minutes, maybe slightly more. But if you start brushing your teeth for like 3 minutes or 4 minutes, like, you're not going to get any more benefit from doing that. And I think it's kind of similar with exercise. Like, the more and more and more you do, the smaller increments in benefit that you're getting. And at some point, there's no point doing any more. And sometimes we call that like junk volume or like fluff or like, you know, or it can lead to overtraining at some point. But the point is, like, I would argue that potentially, depending on where you are in your training cycle and depending on what your training experience and depending on what your goals are, the difference between 3 and 4 sets is like so minimal. Like, I would imagine if I changed my training from 4 sets down to 3 sets, I would notice no difference in my body composition because I'm getting the vast majority of the stimulus and the benefit from those first 3 sets. If you're like, I really want to push myself, I'm really interested in hypertrophy, or I really want to do bodybuilding, I really want to optimize my results, yeah, maybe you need to push that on. Or if you're a very experienced trainer and you really want to push hypertrophy and you want to increase that volume, that would be important. But yeah, I don't think you'll lose very much from dropping from 4 sets to 3 sets.
Yeah, you'll make up a little bit of time as well, so it'll be slightly shorter sessions. But I think you're right, just as if hypertrophy is sort of your main goal, you do have to find ways of increasing the volume across a session. So sometimes that extra set's maybe a good idea, but it's all about goal specific. It's all about your training experience and all these things. So yeah.
Yeah. I really like a good one, Catherine, on the tooth brushing analogy.
I can hear dentists going, that's not true.
It is. Like, you just end up brushing away your gums. Like, if you were brushing teeth for more than like 3 minutes.
Toothpaste is red. No, that's the green gums.
You know that meme that's like, how do you know if someone's stressed and it's like their toothbrush and it's just like flat? Like, that.
Okay, next question. This is a two-parter. My protein target is 100 grams with a fat loss goal. Is it acceptable to reach that target by having one protein bar of 15 to 20 grams per day, or should I be having more natural protein sources?
I think as long as the rest of your protein is coming from, I don't really like to say like natural sources, but like food, essentially like whole food, so that you're enjoying eating food, then yeah, that's fine. Like, Amelia and I eat a protein bar every day. I know, shocking.
Shocking.
There it is. There's the secret to life. A protein bar a day keeps the doctor away.
It keeps us, there's not that much, like, unless you want, because we don't like make any food here. Like, it, yeah.
It's, personal chefs and all that.
It's just easier. Or we just eat out all the time.
What is it that you guys keep eating? Plantain?
Oh.
What is that? I've never heard of it.
Savory banana. What's the difference between banana? Plantain and banana?
It's a banana, but it's not generally sweet. It's quite solid compared to banana, though, isn't it? It's quite hard initially before you cook it.
I've never had it raw.
I don't think you can eat them raw. I think it's like eating a bit of wood.
Plantains are starchy.
Plantains are more starchy, apparently.
Yeah.
Can you please eat one raw and then report back?
They're not enjoyable to eat raw.
You'll have the dentist will be back on going.
Yeah, no teeth.
That shit. No teeth left.
We've become quite obsessed with plantain. So every night we're like, oh, should we go somewhere else? And then we're like, nah.
Plantain.
And then we've been getting like, we've been trying to find nice like Mexican desserts, but everything we buy looks amazing. And then it's just bread. Like, it's just bread with like a little bit of sugar on, or like a little bit of chocolate on top. But all of it is just.
That's so sad.
Yeah, it looks like a donut or something. And then it's like, no, it's bread again. It's not even sweet, really. It's very strange.
Next part of Rose's question. Please, could you talk to me about press-ups and technique? What's better for a set of 12? Doing a full press-up of, say, 4 to 5, where the technique isn't great, I'm not strong enough to get my nose right to the floor, and then to do the remaining ones on the knees or just a full set on the knees. Also, why do my elbows always want to go out to the side as opposed to pointing backwards? Is it just refining the technique? Any tips appreciated? Thanks.
Sure. Andy, you're the king of this.
Push-ups are one of the ones that people get wrong, but also are one that everybody's anatomy is slightly different, so it's about finding the right position for you. Push-up wise and your sets, I would personally normally program as many as you can on your toes, because you need to get used to using your full body weight. The more confident you are using your full body weight, the easier they will become. Finishing your set on your knees, the other issue with doing them on the knees is that everybody seems to do push-ups on the knees slightly differently. So you end up doing box push-ups, which actually you might as well not bother doing, because all you're doing is hinging at the hip. You're not actually using your arms; are just doing this.
And your hips are like left behind.
So you've got like, it's like a square like that, and you're just doing this. So yeah, I'll pop up a video on the group about push-up technique. The other thing with push-ups is similarly to, it sort of translates into your bench and your dumbbell pressing as well, is the angle of your arms. So your arm, there should be a gap. I'm going to just change this. This is going to be make no sense to anybody listening to the podcast, but there should be a 45 degree angle under your armpit. So under the inside of your arm, down the side of your body, down your rib cage, there should be a 45 degree angle. And that gets you the more pec activation from the press up position. A very narrow elbow will be virtually all tricep. And then, but too wide is generally all shoulders, and it's not a nice place to press from. So you want to either be 45 degrees or close in, and just working from there. But
and I guess most people go, just for context, like 90 degrees, right? Like yeah, when they're doing it wrong, it's like, yeah.
It's what I think a lot of people try to do is they try to have their hands level with their shoulders. When in actual fact, your hands should be level with your chest. So they should be probably thumb, I would say, is nipple level, and that's probably where you want to be from there, is about exactly. Again, this isn't making any sense to anybody who listens to the podcast, but we're all doing
it. If you're listening to the podcast, you're missing out on great demos in the group.
Exactly. So yeah, that's the best. That's the best way to look at push-ups. Push-ups are very well butchered by a lot of people, but actually they're quite simple, and it's just little simple things to fix them. It's not huge changes, it's just like little simple things that fix the movement for you.
Do you remember when we were doing our photo shoot and we were all at the bottom of a press up and he's like, right, hold it there, and we're like,
I took one hand off from scratch.
Sorry, yeah, we were shaking, you were not.
Shaking.
Rose just commented saying, thank you, I shall adjust my nipple level tomorrow.
I think it's the hand you need to adjust, not the nipples.
Yeah, stick the nipples on the shoulder.
Oh, I was going to say something, but I'm not.
Oh, go on. You know you want to.
I was gonna say, yeah, if you're like me and you've got man boobs, your man nipples are at my knees, so that's gonna be a really interesting push-up.
Oh yeah, Andy.
Totally have man boobs.
Yeah.
Moobs. It's about the moobs.
Next question from Sharon. It would be great to have some repetition of tips on how to stay process focused when scale weight isn't shifting. My goal is fat loss, and at 3 weeks on commit to six, the numbers have hardly moved. It's hard not to resort to old behaviors to get that quicker weight loss. Thanks.
Okay, I think a couple of things here. Firstly, like reminding yourself that quick weight loss that you've previously got on previous attempts wasn't maintainable and wasn't enjoyable, and to start like trying to embrace the process. Like I stop myself saying enjoy the process there, because it's not always all enjoyable, but I think the point is not to resent the process and not to think about putting the rest of your life on hold while you're doing this. Like the whole point of this is you live your best life while you're getting results. Like you don't need to put the rest of your life on hold. So in that sense, it kind of takes away from feeling like you need to, like essentially the impatience of getting to that end goal as quickly as possible. The reason that we, like in check-ins and things and on the accountability post, we look at your process goals. So like, what have you done today? Like what are your steps? What was your nutrition like? Have you got your fruit and veg in? Are you putting your protein? Did you get a workout in? Those are your process. That's how we define if it's been a successful week, like how you're doing on those levels, not what the scale weight's doing. That will take care of itself as a byproduct of the actions that you're taking. So if you focus on those actions and focus on the process, you will get that end result. But you can't, like, I mean, it's going to fluctuate. So if you're tying all your hopes to this weight, and as Catherine was saying previously, like, why is that the goal? And thinking about that, like, okay, well, I want to weigh X amount, or I want to lose weight because I want to feel better about myself. I want to have more energy. I want to fit in these clothes that I used to fit in. Whatever your why or reason for doing this is, remember that, because often you get there and realize it wasn't at the weight that you thought it was. And then you can let go of that kind of arbitrary scale weight, like fixation, and focus on what's actually important, which is the reason that you want to reach that weight. So focusing on the process to get there hopefully will help you with like that bit of impatience that you're feeling, which is totally normal. but you really need to trust us. And also, like, we see this in the group all the time, and I love when people share this, but I don't know if it always totally resonates with people. And I just, like, sometimes I'll see it and I'm like, I want everyone to read this and remember this and remember it themselves when they think back. But it's like, something will be very similar to this. Like, you know, I've been sticking to things for 3 weeks and I still don't think I've seen much progress. And then, like, a couple of days later, they're like, I stuck to it and I kept sticking to it, and I've just lost 3 kilograms in the last couple of days. Because that tends to be what happens. Like, you don't see much, and then suddenly it does happen. It does drop, or the scale weight, the fat loss on the scales is being masked by something. And then at some point you do see that fat loss come to fruition on the scales, and that's, like, exciting for people. But just keep focusing on the process, because that is what's going to get you results.
Also, as well, you have to remember, 3 weeks really isn't a long time. I know this is Commit to Six and it's a 6 week program, but 3 weeks is genuinely over in the blink of an eye. Like, it's the things that you can build in 3 weeks, though, are the starting to build in good habits that are going to last you for the rest of your life. It's the things that you're going to learn and move on with that, you know, you might find that some people, you know, it's not until they hit committed, you know, some people who end up coming out to committed, that's when the weight loss happens. But it's because they've stuck to the 6 weeks and they've managed to get their good habits built in, and they're continuously doing, and they're doing their morning routines, they're getting their steps in, they're doing everything right. And I know it's frustrating. It's the same thing with, like, things like injury and stuff. It's frustrating. It's, you know, we all have impatience issues at times. We all want things now. You know, that's not helped by the fact that you can pretty much get anything next day delivery. But we have to remember that that's not how your body works. Your body works when it needs to and how it needs to. And you just need to keep being patient and just keep ticking away.
Yeah, and like, it is and isn't a 6 week program, is it? Like, yeah, most people who get results stay on. Like, it's just like, it's like a 6 week introduction to coaching, essentially. Yeah. And if that is what you want, and you just want a bit of a kickstart, and you want to know where to put your efforts to get the best results, you can stay for 6 weeks and then carry on your own. But the people that get the best results are the people who stay and get stuck into coaching and get to know their coach as well. Like, how much closer are you guys with the people on committed? Because you've built that foundation with them, because you know them now, and you know when to push them, you know when to hold back a little bit, you know what they're going through, you know some of their backstory, you know what they've tried before, you know what does and doesn't work for them. And it's so much easier to coach in that manner, and to get people results.
Awesome. We have two more questions left on the post. Andy, have you been deleting them as I go? Or, no, I've not deleted them.
I'll do them just now, don't worry.
Okay, I feel really brutal doing it.
I'm brutal, like, sometimes I'm like, could you repeat that question? And he's like, no, it's deleted.
It's gone, it's too late.
To be fair, it also gives you the option, do you want to block this person? Do you want to stop them from posting? I mean, you're sitting going, nah, better not. That's just nasty.
So from Fiona, my right arm is stronger than my left. I'm right-handed. So for things like the single arm row, I can go heavier on that side. Does that matter? Should I be working them the same and using the same weights, or going heavier on the right side if I can? We're not talking huge differences, 2 to 3 kilograms at most. I just added in at most, says difference.
don't train heavier on one side. That's how you cause imbalances. You want to make sure that you're moving at the same pace both sides, and also it's bollock trying to remember if you're doing different weights on different sides, because you've got to keep those separately running as well. But yeah, don't change the weights, stick with the same weights, otherwise you may cause even more imbalances.
Agreed. Tracy's just commented here saying, I've noticed in the last 3 weeks a massive change in my mindset with food. That's a massive win for me already. I'm so happy. That's so, so important. And this is kind of what we meant, is that it might take you 6 weeks, it might take you longer to kind of fix some of the negative connotations you've had with dieting before, or improve your relationship with food, get your mindset right around dieting, and then you start seeing results. Like, it's not always jumping straight into something. These things can take time, and it's not a race. Like, we don't win. And I think sometimes there is, from a client perspective, this like weird notion that we want you to get results straight away. And actually sometimes like results are an improved mindset, an improved relationship with food. Like there's some of the most important results that can at some point lead to weight loss, but you need to figure those things out first. Otherwise it's like you're just kind of putting a plaster over what the issue is. So it's figuring out, like part of coaching is figuring out why you're overeating. Why hasn't this worked before? What are the barriers that are stopping you, and getting to know yourself a little bit. And unfortunately that takes longer than just like, I don't know, like a one chat with a coach or like your introduction of why do you think you're overeating? Like that takes a lot of time to figure out for some people. And 6 weeks is even quite a short period of time to do that. So don't put so much pressure on yourself, and try and remember like what we want for you is this to be the last time you ever need to do this. Like so many people that come to us have yo-yo dieted for, or a lot of people say what feels like their whole life. Like I've been on a diet essentially on and off for my whole life. We want this to be the last time that happens, so that we're actually getting to the crux of the problem, so you can actually figure out what it is that's stopping you reaching your goals until you can actually get there. Like that isn't going to be a quick fix. That isn't what we're selling here, but we want to solve that problem like once and for all.
It sounds slightly callous, but the weight on your scale is probably the last thing that we're impressed with. It's the last thing that we're that arsed about. But things like that, obviously things like that, my mindset's changing around food. Jesus, that's far and away outweighs anything that you can do on the scale, like as far as I'm concerned.
And the thing is with like that can change your life. Like losing X amount in 6 weeks doesn't really change your life. Like it might if you do it in the right ways, for sure. But realistically, like a change in mindset, the way you're thinking about food, the way you're thinking about your body, the way that you even think about dieting or changing behaviors. And if you can change that from like, I have to do this, I feel restrictive, I resent the process, to I get to do this, I love my body. This is a like form of self-respect and like self-care. That's huge. Like if that's quote unquote all you got from this process, that can change your life for the rest of your life. If it's, oh yeah, well I lost loads of weight, but I didn't go out and enjoy myself for the whole 6 weeks, and I was just really restrictive and I sucked everything exactly perfectly. But
now, I was fucking miserable.
Yeah, I was miserable. And now after, you know, like I've rebounded and I'm just back to where I started. Like that's the last thing that we want.
Awesome. Last question. It's obligatory creatine question. I understand if you don't want to answer this, but I was just looking to see your opinion on creatine for kids. My son is 10 and has mild cerebral palsy, which amongst other things affects his fatigue levels, both physically and mentally. He eats really well, which is great, as we have to ensure he is fueled well to get through the day. But from what I understand about creatine, I am wondering if it can be a useful supplement for him. I've been looking at research, and from what I can see, it could/would, but just wondering what your thoughts would be.
So my thoughts on this is, I agree, like it probably could/would. There isn't much research on this. There isn't much research on creatine in kids, partly for, you know, getting ethical approval and things. Shona, I know you took creatine during pregnancy, and there isn't much research on that either, because most research on pregnant women, like it's just very hard to get ethical approval for that. However, there's absolutely no rationale for why that wouldn't be a benefit during pregnancy, or why that would have any like negative side effects, much the same as kids taking creatine. But like as a professional, I can't recommend that, because that's my name on the line and there isn't evidence for it. Would I do it if it was my child? Yeah, probably. But again, that's not a recommendation. So do with that what you will. I don't know if you've got anything to add, Shona.
Well, I did it with my child.
Is Cormac on creatine already? Absolutely, he's like, that's going, stacked.
Bring your mic closer, we can't hear you.
Me?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's better.
Sorry. I took it throughout my pregnancy. He's not taking it right now, but maybe he is, because I'm breastfeeding and I take it every day. And currently he's perfectly healthy. I took it because there it was hypothesized, obviously, as Emma says, there's not any studies done on pregnant women, but it can decrease the chance of fetal brain injuries in third trimester. So with that in mind, cerebral palsy obviously is a condition associated with the brain, so it might, I mean, as Emma says, I would never want to recommend something that someone did with someone else's child, but it's a really great question, really great question. And I mean, I can't see the negative impact personally.
I wouldn't. If it was my child, this is what I would do. I'd probably give a low-ish dose and then just see if there was any response. The other thing is, it's not going to make a huge difference. It's not going to be like night and day. And I think this is with creatine, a lot of the time people are like, oh, I've taken it for a couple of weeks and I didn't see any difference. And it's like, yeah, it's not going to be like a huge difference that you feel. Like, for example, I've not had any creatine since I've been in Mexico, so what, a month, and I don't really feel any difference.
You have started eating a lot of plantain.
That's it, that's the difference.
Plantain plus creatine. Oh my god.
Yeah,
plantain supplements right now. Get in my veins.
Yeah, like there is a benefit, but I think sometimes people misinterpret like how much of a benefit that would be. Like, I'll definitely start taking it as soon as I get home, but I doubt it's going to be a huge, and if you're worried about it, I probably just wouldn't. But again, like it's in food, you know, it's not like, it's just hard to get enough from food to saturate your response, your stores. Yeah, good question though.
Yeah, really good question.
Yeah, that's all of the questions over.
Well done, question master. That was fantastic.
Well done.
Thank you.
Andy, do you want to do our exit?
Yes. We would love you to all give us a 5-star rating on iTunes, because that's where you get our ratings. It just gives us more viewability for people who maybe don't listen to the podcast, who should be listening to the podcast. So yeah, if you could do that. Commit to Six sign up opens in 2 weeks.
No, Commit to Six sign up opens in a week.
Holy shit!
But only if you're on the waiting list. So if you go to estufitness.co.uk/commit6, you can join the waiting list. We always get this question. So anyone already on Commit 6, you guys will move to committed, not re-sign up to Commit to 6. And that will be posted in the last week. And the reason that we don't let anyone sign up for that is because it starts a direct debit. So we want you to sign up kind of at the last moment so that you're not paying more, essentially.
Yeah.
And that is all. And excellent questions. Keep them coming.
Top class.
Bye.